They used to say we're burning tape, but these days it doesn't matter at all.
We don't have to pay for it, you know? Well, actually we do.
How much tape do we have left?
Oh, unlimited. Yeah. Riverside would be happy to charge an arm and a leg for even more time. I'm pretty sure Max has the same in the Tim tool, you know? So the amount of steps is limited.
Yes, yeah, so we have a paywall. And when you're coming to that, you have to enter PayPal.
Yeah, that's true.
Before you complete this form, you must enter your PayPal.
Exactly,
Continue with the process.
Please give your credit details here.
Welcome to the What's Your Baseline podcast, where we demystify enterprise architecture and business process management.
We're here to bring best practices and lessons learned from our years to your ears, as well as interviewing friends we've met along the way on our professional journeys.
My name is Roland Voigt, and I'm joined today by my co-host, JM Erlinson. Hey, JM, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. My goodness. Roland, let's give people in our audience a little behind-the-scenes look at things. Before we actually get started recording with our wonderful guests, we do a little warm-up where we have a chance to chat about the topics of the day and people's thoughts on things. And my goodness, I've been having a really great time this morning. I wish we'd actually recorded some of these things because I'm really excited to chat with our guests today. How are you doing today, my friend?
You have a very weird idea of fun conversation, because just for the guests behind the scene, we spoke about coffee, we spoke about beer, we spoke about guns, which I think is a very weird mixture of topics.
It was a weird combination of things, yes. But you know what? It gave me a really good feeling to get a chance to just get started on the right foot, recording with friends. You know, on these sorts of dark and isolating days as we move from spring to summer, it's really great to be able to sit down for just a little while with the people we care about, listen in on their thoughts and best practices, and get a chance to know them as a person. And there's no better way to get to know someone than by introducing them. So Roland, I'm so excited. We have Max on the show. Max, welcome to What's Your Baseline?
Thank you very much.
So Max, for everyone on the show, we'd like to introduce them, introduce themselves. Tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, and a high level why you think we might have invited you on the show today.
Okay. Yeah. Nice to meet you. My name is Max. I'm 33 years old and I'm from Germany. I'm living near Munich and I'm working at Tim Solutions. We are doing a workflow tool for business processes, for automating business processes. And I'm working here for over 11 years now, I think. I started as a working student, then I got a project manager, and now I am the lead of the project management department at Tim Solutions. And I help our customers to automate, to digitalize their workflows every day. And I think that's the reason why Roland invited me.
Yeah, and of course, we work together for a limited time. So that's how we got to know each other. And I know a little bit behind the scenes. So what Tim does, the tool does, and all those things. But before we get started with that, tell us a little bit more about your experience in, and by the way, this episode is called Low Code, No Code Workflow Automation. So your experience in that area.
Yeah, my experience in that area is, of course, on the one hand, I'm working with the tool every day because I'm implementing the workflows for the customers. But also we are a user of our own tool because, it's the best when you not only sell your tool, but you also use it. And that's a proof that it's a good tool. And that's basically my experience. I started in the university. I had already contact with the topic of business processes during university classes, for example, in business process management classes, but they were more on a theoretical level. So basically it was about documenting workflows, it was about creating your process house, your process landscape and so on. But into the topic of the workflows, I really got into with the Tim Solutions because I started as a working student during my university classes. And then I started as a full-time job. So basically my whole experience in the working is all in workflows. So I did nothing else than workflows for the last 11 years.
Well, that's a good place to sort of ask a question that I think some of our younger audience members might be interested in. Tell me about the experience of moving between working student at a company and actually being an employee there. What was the process of finding the organization? How did you move from, being somebody who was associated with the university to somebody who is associated and employed by the company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the transition is kind of exciting, you have to say, because as a working student, and you have to say we are a small company. Before I tell you the details, we are a very small company. That means during my days as a student, I think we were 12 to 15 employees, something around that. Now we are around 40 employees. And therefore, the transition was kind of hard because you start as a working student. You are the small guy. You're 20 years old. You're completely fresh. You have no idea. And your colleagues, of course, they are all completely experienced in the sector. They have finished their studies and so on. And you're coming there as a working student. And then the transition from being that small pupil, I say, to being a full member of the team, that is really quite hard because, you need to make your place, you need to establish your place in the company, and especially when it comes to the part of getting higher positions in the company. And then from that step on, you have somebody who was before your colleague when you're a working student, and now you're not boss because we are very, very straightforward. We are very linear in the company, but you're some kind of his boss, then this is quite hard to do. But you can do it, of course. I think in bigger companies, this is a little bit easier because you can easily shift between departments and then you have a whole different team that, maybe they even didn't know you before. But in small companies, that transition, is a little hard and takes a lot of time, of course, as well.
Yeah, I can see that this might be a shift.
Yeah, definitely.
but obviously we have you here to talk about workflows, and there's obviously some kind of philosophies behind workflows. There's different types of workflow automation, RPA, yeah, and the heavy hitters like an Appian or Pega, or the small and nimble and quick low code, no code, and whatnot. I'm pretty sure you have way more examples than I could think about it. But obviously, there's also a philosophy behind your way of automating. Can you share and explain this to our audience?
Yeah, sure. Before I tell you what we are doing, I think the workflow and digitalizing and automation, these are the most misused words in the last years, because every tool is having some kind of workflow. It's mm-hmm. that buzzword bingo, we always say. Everybody is using these buzzwords. Everybody is having workflow. Everybody is having automation. And in the last half year, everybody's having AI, for example. So yeah, the same for workflow. Every tool has some kind of workflow. So you mentioned really dedicated workflow tools. But when you just imagine about SharePoint or an Outlook, they also have some kind of workflows. And therefore, it's a very good start to start with the philosophy, because you really have to declare, what do we see as automation? What do we see as a workflow? And what do we really mean with digitalizing the workflow? Mm-hmm. And for us, a workflow tool is basically something that is an independent tool, first of all. So that's nothing that is in specific tools. It has to be an independent platform. Because when you imagine or think about your business processes, a business process for me is a red line that goes through the company. And that red line that goes through your company doesn't care about departments. It doesn't care about external persons. It doesn't care about internal persons. And also that red line doesn't care about different IT systems. Mm-hmm. And therefore, for us, it's very important that a workflow tool, or our workflow tool as well, is an independent platform that combines, that is able to combine everything. That means that it can combine all the employees, that it can combine all the suppliers that you need in your business process, and also that it combines all your third-party systems. And therefore, it's necessary that it's an independent platform. So it doesn't help you at all when you say, my specific finance system that has a workflow, we can do everything with it. No, you can't. Mm-hmm. You can only cover specific topics in that finance topic or in that finance sector. You can, of course, digitalize, automate, workflow your finance processes. But then when it comes to HR processes or organizational processes, you need a different tool. And that's not the goal for a workflow tool. You need a workflow tool that's a central place for all your business processes with which you can automate everything. It's the same for the process documentation tools. They are not bound to specific topics. They are one tool to document all your processes, and it should be the same for the workflows. And this is exactly what we are doing. We are connecting everything from employees, from persons, to third-party systems. Everything should be combined in a workflow. So really the end-to-end process that must be, that is the goal, to digitalize the complete process.
Some people think of these things as workflow tools as their own workflow. Some sort of conceptualize these as integration platforms. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you see this as a difference between like an integration as a service, like bus, mm-hmm. versus like a workflow automation platform. Like what are the lines? What do these terms mean? How do they interact with each other? And where do you see certain value in the approach that one takes versus the other?
Yeah, integration platform, for me, that is more something, a very technical part. It's like you said, it's connecting different systems, it's connecting different services, different applications. But what you're leaving out with these integration platforms is the human factor. We are not at that step yet that in every company, everything is running automatically with any bots or something like that. You always need some kind of humans currently still.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future, this will be different. But for now, the human part is a very, very important part in the workflows. And therefore, what we always call our system, not a workflow tool, we are specifically a human workflow tool. That means the human is the centric or is in the center of our workflows, and everything is around the humans. So when it's going through approvals, for example, a person, a supervisor, he's the person, he's the employee, he has to do that approval. And there is no integration of a third party needed. It's just simply getting a form saying, yes, I approve your vacation request, and then it's going through. After that, maybe we are writing the information in other systems. That would be then the integration part. That would be then integrating and putting the results from the workflow into third-party systems. But the workflow is a combination of both. So the human part and that integration part. And just integration doesn't bring you that much. And also just a human workflow brings you more than just an integration, I think. But the combination of both, that is what you want to achieve.
Yeah, that makes sense. And back in the day, there were obviously business process management systems, you know, that had a similar approach to it, you know, to orchestrate the process. And we had way back when, in the early 30s of our episodes, we had Bernd Rücker from Camunda here. And he explained the orchestration part. That is obviously the big thing for him. But yeah, I understand that this is a difference compared to a pure integration, technical integration tool.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what you can say for our system is at least we are a layer. That means what, as I mentioned or as I explained, we connect everything, but we also want to be that layer to that integration phase. So the person who's involved in a workflow, he's just working in the workflow, so just in TIM. And TIM is then caring about the information, the data flow in the background. That means when I do my approval, the workflow itself cares about putting that information into the systems that are, that need that information. So basically we are a layer for the employee to have a minimalized view on everything, on the whole company, without the need to be a professional in several tools because the workflow is caring about everything. So we are making it easier for the employees to care or to participate in the workflow.
And this is something that I think that we want to stress here is, I see a lot of organizations who do this sort of thing and a bunch of different ways of doing it. And also that these workflows have existed in companies for as long as most companies have existed. Like these are not, like the digitization of a workflow is the technology has changed, but the process in a lot of cases hasn't changed. This is just a way, maybe this is my perspective on this, but I see, you know, these workflow tools as a way of accelerating and de-risking business operations. This is not doing something new. For the most part, you already had to do that from a regulatory obligation perspective or from just the realities of business operations. These things are about getting there faster rather than having to spend all your time and worry about all of the breaks that are coming as a result of the human error that is introduced with human operations. And I feel like that's a question that I want to put back to you, because when you speak about such a human tool, you know, how do you see the philosophy of the creep of human error versus the creep of system error versus the technical implementation challenges? Like, where do you see the work being spent in an implementation of this kind of tool to prevent these sorts of errors from cropping up and to ensure smooth business operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the errors can happen everywhere. So when you imagine, as you said it, a workflow is basically not a new invention of the process. It's just putting that workflow in a stricted order. That means, just imagine we do not have any PCs or something like that. There were processes before, but that processes were done via paper sheets. Paper sheets were filled out, they were handed around in the company, everybody was signing it, and at the end, if you were lucky, you had a fully completed paper sheet that was completely signed by everybody, and then it's done. The workflow, he will not really change, or in the first step, of course, it will not really change these steps. It will just transport them into a new medium, and that is the digital format, the workflow itself. And of course, you will always have some errors in the workflow. There is no way around, because just imagine you have a form with a free text field, somebody is entering some nonsense, then of course you have an error in the workflow. But with the digital workflow, you can do your best to prevent this. So for example, provide the user not free input fields, provide them select boxes where they cannot do any typos, for example. You can do validations. So for example, when you say I have a vacation request, I cannot put a date, the start date of my vacation after the end date of my vacation. So just simple validations. And that's something with which you can achieve a very, very big step into the information quality. Of course, you will never get 100% because the human error will always be there. There will always be somebody who is doing nonsense in a form. And that is, you cannot go by this, but you can minimize that error to the smallest. And of course, what you can also do is with the workflow, even though there are happening errors, you can do an error handling in your workflow. To say, for example, if I'm at an approval step, I have to approve it and I see, oh no, the requester, he did an error, I simply give it back to him via the workflow. So we are doing a loop. And then he can correct his error and give it back. So we are still in that strict form of the workflow, of the process. We are not leaving the track, so basically. But we are taking care about all these errors. And of course, when it comes to the integration part, when we are using services in order to transfer information from the workflow to the other systems, of course, there is always a big error when you're doing this manually, because you're doing typos, you're copying the wrong parts, you're missing out something like that. And of course, you can get rid of this completely when using the workflow and connecting it directly to the system. Because then you have validated information, you have the approved information in your workflow, and then exactly that set is transferred to the other system. So there is no typo, there is no loss of information during that transfer to the third-party system. And of course, errors can happen also there. We don't have to lie to each other. Errors can happen everywhere, but you can minimize them in the best way. And the next step, of course, would be the part of the reporting. But I think this is something where we come later on and just talk about the workflow. But the reporting, of course, is the next step to improve your workflows and also your error handling.
Sounds like there's a bunch of work to go through to make this come to life. But what you're doing is you're doing work up front so that you don't have to do work every time, which I think has always been the promise of automation, and particularly digital automation in these historically quite manual processes. So tell me about how a system like a no-code or low-code system changes the approach from historically code-based and very heavy, large systems. So, you know, we've talked about this before a little bit, but I want to get your perspective on this, because there are ERPs. There are big-ass business rule engines. Like, these things exist. What does low-code, no-code do to change the game?
Yeah. The game changer is the change of the target group. So basically, who is the target group that is having the problems with the workflows? It's always the department. And who should be able to solve their problems by their own? The department. Because basically, when you're using such heavy solutions like an ERP system, then it's still the department who's having the problem, but the problem solvers who are creating or who implementing the workflows are the persons on the IT department. And I think everybody knows that in the IT department, the IT department is heavy under load. So it's a very hard fight to get your project into the IT department, to implement your workflow in the IT department. And therefore, we have to do that shift. So the target group who's having the problems with the workflow should be the target group who should be able to create their workflows or to solve their problems with a workflow tool. And this is only possible via the no-code, low-code solution because, when in the department there is no technical specialist. So, for example, when you're going to the HR department, there will nobody be that can do HTML, that can do Java coding or something like that. So they are not able to solve their problems. And the same for more technical solutions. So, for example, if you have a workflow tool that is technical or more technical, you have the same problems. And therefore, for our goal, it's not only that the department should be able to use the workflow, but the department should also be able to create their workflows. And that's only possible with no code, low code.
Which is an interesting perspective, to say at least. You know, if I put my IT hat on, obviously questions like IT governance, you know, understanding what's out there, you know, rationalizing which applications are you, all that type of stuff. You know, I'm not sure if you make a lot of friends in IT departments with that. What are your experiences when it comes to that? Because I've worked in organizations where IT just simply shut you off and said, no, you can't do this, you know, my way or the highway.
Exactly. The IT department is our biggest enemy. We are always getting to that position that the department is completely convinced to do the workflow with a team workflow because they like the solution, they want to do it. But the hardest enemy is not the person who's giving the finances, but it's always the IT department because they are always having their own tools. Even though they have a lot of workload, they do not want that the departments are stealing their topics, I think. So, they're gathering everything. They want to keep everything in the IT department. So, therefore, it's also our experience that the IT department is our biggest enemy.
Yeah, how do you overcome that? You know, because obviously you obviously make some sales, so you have a story to tell. You know, what is the, how do you overcome those objections that might come up? You mentioned workload. In IT, you know, go back to the line and wait 2 years until I have it automated. That might be one reason, but I'm pretty sure there's others as well.
Yes. So basically what we are doing is, or what was a big step is, of course, that whole cloud topic. To say it's not a tool that is on-premise where the IT department is on hold of, so that they need to care about it, they need to do backups or installations or updates, something like that. It's the cloud topic that we said, if the customer wants it, we are doing all that hosting for him. We are installing, we are doing the updates, we are doing all the backups. And therefore, it's simply just pay for service. So the customer is coming to us, the department is coming to us, we have the problem with the workflow, we want to do that. How can you solve it? And we are simply giving them a server. We are caring about all the technical part. And the IT department, we are going around them, I say. So we are like a small submarine. And we are starting small with the department until the workflow topic is getting so big that the IT department cannot get against it. So when you're at that step that we have 2, 3, 4 workflows in the system, and then there is coming somebody from the IT and saying, oh, what's that system? Do we really need that? It's already too late for them. Then they cannot get against it. But we also had many customers currently where we did exactly that approach. And the IT department was so excited about that topic that they really implemented their own workflows with it. So I have a customer, for example, it's a local energy services. And there it was exactly that topic. They have... basically, they have a ticketing tool for their normal work and so on. But they also have some, it's an application owner review process, I think it's called. Every application owner has once a year to confirm that he is still in charge for that application. And this is something that they couldn't really solve with a ticketing tool. They were previously creating hundreds of tickets manually for each of the IT systems so that somebody is getting a ticket and can say, yes, I'm still in charge for that application. And they saw our tool and they said, oh, we can solve our problem totally easy with that. And now the IT department is a fan of ours. So they're also using us for their stuff. Of course, not all the IT processes are done with a TIM workflow. They still have their ticketing tool for Scrum, for Kanban, and so on. But their main processes, their business processes, they are also digitalized with a TIM workflow.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to this because I'm currently suffering through some Jira things. So, yes. But maybe to come back to the workflow itself, I think there's one thing that is very important because, and you mentioned it, I think the point is you want to start with a process, correct? and not with technology.
Yes, exactly, exactly. It's all about processes. It's not about I want to care what kind of database do I need, what kind of technology web service I need. It's always about processes. And that's why keep it simple. Keep it to that topic, concentrate on that topic. So do not waste time in technical implementation. Waste that time in getting your process better. Like JM said before, put that time into validation of your form so that the form is bulletproof or something like that, and not into technology. So do not waste your time with doing a big setup, do 4 weeks of installation of a system, then do half a year of implementation of a workflow. It has to be quick. It has to be easy. Because what you're also seeing in the workflows is, basically you're seeing it also in the process topic itself, a process is not something that is fixed. A process is something that is always moving. So you're creating your workflow. Next month, there is a new regulation. You have to adapt your workflow. And when you're always needing big projects to adapt, to change your process, then you're lost because you will always be slower than the changes in the process with the implementation. And that's the next important step. A workflow needs to be changed very easy and very fast because it can really happen from one day to another that there needs to be some changes. Especially we in Germany, we are quite regulated. So we have many, many topics where you simply need to adapt to new rules, to new laws, to new regulations. And the same for the processes. A process is a living thing. It's not something that you do once and then it's like this forever. It's living. It's changing. And yeah, when you have these heavy tanker solutions, it's not making your life hard for creating the workflows initially. It's also making your life hard for maintaining your workflows.
And that leads me to an idea around a governance council for workflows. I mean, this feels like a technology tool that itself would work in concert with workflow governance activities that are already happening. You know, you have a risk and compliance team, you have business operations teams, you have people who are business specialists and people who are aligning with strategy. All of these need to be incorporated to process the necessary changes and then implement them in technology to be able to try their hardest to keep up with this very dynamic landscape. And I wonder how that is done, because that is something that feels like a kind of an uphill battle. You are always behind the change that is coming for you. And that means you need yourself a way of understanding the change, documenting the change, socializing that change and validating the change, and then implementing that change in the tool. How do you see that as being done? How do you see that the whole language of change coming to life?
The language of change for a process will also change a little bit when you are working with workflows. So, of course, you have the person who is responsible for that specific workflow. It's basically the process owner, I say. We have the same for the workflow. You have a process owner whose responsibility to keep that process updated, to keep it conform with the regulations and so on. Of course, for them, it's more or less the same. So they need to be informed about changes. They need to take care about these changes. They need to implement the changes. But the nice part about the workflow is now you do not need to inform everybody in the company about these changes. Because just imagine, you have the workflow tool. The employees are working with the workflow tool. The workflow tool is basically working like your inbox in Outlook. You're getting your tasks in an inbox. You see what you have to do, you get a task description, you get the form where you can enter information, and then you can mark your task as finished. Answer the task, I say, when we're talking about inboxes. And basically, when you do a change in the process, you do not need to inform the whole company or every process participant, because you change the process at the central step, the process owner is changing it, and then he's publishing it to the system. And then when you start the next request in the system, it of course will take that new version with that additional step, or maybe you remove the step, and then it will of course consider that new process template. And then, of course, somebody is getting a task in his inbox that he has never seen before. But that's, don't worry about it, because you see a task description where we can read, that's a task I haven't seen yet. I don't know what to do. So I just read the task description. What do I have to do? In the best way, you also have a form that is bulletproof. You see the mandatory fields. What do I really have to fill out when finishing that step or answering that request? And then he simply fills it out, like the system says him, and then he simply answers that task, or he finishes that task, and the process can proceed. So the change management, the training management, that's a complete different level, because just imagine you're creating or you're working on your workflows by the paper sheet. When you are having two approvals currently, and tomorrow you have three approvals, then you need to train and teach everybody in the company, guys, tomorrow you need to do a third approval when finishing that request. And with the workflow, there is simply an inbox, an item in your inbox that says, do the approval. And if it's the one, the first, the second, or the third, doesn't matter, because it's just do the approval. You simply answer it and it's finished. So the whole training, the whole change mechanism, that's completely changed, because you can simply roll it out. The persons, they see it, they're already used to the workflow system. So it's not something that they say, I need to do something completely different now. It's just a task. It's just an inbox, that item in your inbox that you have not seen before. Do it like it's described and finished.
I know we're burning a hole in people's brains right now. Lots of great information so far. So we're going to take a quick break for folks to decompress, take a little bit of time for you to maybe take a sip of your coffee, and ponder a couple of questions. So think about your strategy for workflow automation, or just workflow at all. What changes have you seen, and in the way in which you approach it? What challenges have you seen in things like large lift automation tools like ERPs? Have you ever tried something like a low code or a no code solution? And how has your experience been with this approach? What challenges have you faced, and what successes have you seen? We'll leave you for a moment and come back with our second section, the how.
Welcome back. So that was a very interesting introduction into low-code, no-code tools, Max. So thanks for that, and all the benefits, and especially the potential conflict that you have with people who own IT. That's a very interesting topic that I'm pretty sure every department will have the same questions, you know, depending on what their relationship is with their IT department. But let's dig down into the details now. You know, we said in the first segment that having a process is the foundation for any process automation, which actually should go without a saying. But I'm pretty sure you mean that a little bit more specific, you know, to have a starting point for a process and not just an idea. Or as one of our finances guys at one point in a to-be-not-named organization that I worked with said, who sold process management tools? I said, Roland, we do have a process. It's just not documented.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's also a challenge that we have to face at some customers, of course. But I will describe to you the ideal way. So how we imagine what is the perfect step to start with the workflow. But of course, you can do it in all other variants as well. So basically, we mentioned before that the target group for not only using the workflows, but also for creating the workflows are the departments themselves. The same count is for our workflows. So what do we start with? The first step, or what the companies are doing in the first step when getting in contact with the topic of process management, is of course the documentation of the BPMN diagram, or the process diagrams, especially BPMN diagrams. That's the most used notation, of course, as we all know. And that's the step where the most companies are currently standing. They have their processes documented in the system or in a process management tool in the BPMN notation. So we were thinking, why not use that BPMN documentation when it's already there? So our approach is not to have two encapsulated systems, a process management for documentation and a workflow tool that's completely separate. We want to combine these two worlds. So basically what we are doing is we are taking that BPMN diagram from that process documentation tool, and then we can transfer it with one click into our workflow. So our workflows are always based on the BPMN notation. That means there is no TIM workflow without having a BPMN diagram. Of course, if you do not have that documentation yet, then of course you can draw a BPMN diagram just for the purpose of the workflow automation. That's also an approach that some customers are doing, mm-hmm. and they're missing, of course, the documentation step. But the main topic or the main advantage that you get with that is, of course, on the one hand, you do not need to redo something. So you're not drawing a picture for the department, and then you're automating a workflow in a completely different tool. So maybe your documented process has nothing to do with the automated process because these are two separate worlds. And for us, these worlds are not separate. They are the same. And that's why the base for a workflow in TIM is always the BPMN diagram that defines which task do you have? What kind of order do they getting active? What are the decisions in your process? Where do we have parallel work? And also the whole topic of the responsibilities. Who's responsible for which task? All these informations are in the BPMN file. So why not use that?
Obviously, before you automate something, you should optimize your process, right? So that might be an exercise in advance. But one thing that I really like with the TIM solution is not only that you could have a single press of a button and shoot it over into your automation tool, but it also had things like versioning and all those type of things, you know, so you literally get control over your process. To your example, you know, if a regulation changes and now you have a certain process to be updated, right, you still have a bunch of instances, and we will talk about this, obviously, of the old process in the workflow. Right, and you need to manage those as well before you then start a change workflow in a new version of the same process. But I had to say that obviously you should optimize your processes beforehand before you shoot it over.
Yeah, that's a step that I missed out. But basically what we always see is the process that is just there for documentation purposes, that's not something that is really lived. You always have to do changes in order to automate it. I do not say it's a technical image because it's still that process documentation, but it's a process documentation that is more specified for a workflow. And what I always say is the process that you are drawing and that you're automating, that's the only truth, because that's the truth how you execute your processes. That's how you go through your processes and not what you were thinking in your process documentation. Oh, how could we do it? Maybe that's the way, because it's always hard to keep track on that as well. When you just do the documentation, you have a very nice process model, but in reality, everybody's working like they want. They're doing loops, they're then breaking out there, they're breaking out at the other part of a process. So it's always hard to keep track on that. And that's the main advantage to have it as a process model that is in the BPMN diagram and then transfer to the workflow.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue, right? Because you obviously need to have, and we will talk about that, much more detail when it comes to automation than what a normal business user would see, right? So what I've seen in the past is clients who have created a business process, mm-hmm. and then they created a technical business process, mm-hmm. which I think is a little bit misleading. You know, I think you should have one. If the world is complex, then the world is complex. Right. But I think a business user, you know, the person who does it is a grown adult, and they can handle the reality of things that are out there.
You're completely right. I also agree, if the world is complex, then you also have a complex process. You cannot get around that, because when you are doing your process documentation in a more simple way, then you're just lying to yourself, because then you have a process documentation that is not your reality.
Oh, and to the regulators and whoever looks at that documentation, you know, your senior management, whoever. Yes, I'm with you.
Yes, exactly. But maybe that's a good step where I can explain a different topic in TIM. Because what we are able to do is we extended the BPMN. The BPMN, not in regards that we put in additional symbols, but we are able to put in, we call these action handlers. You can imagine like modules that you can put behind the BPMN shapes. That's something that you are doing when designing the workflow then in TIM. That means you are drawing your process model in the process documentation, like you know it. Then you shift it to TIM. And in TIM, now you're able to put in additional modules behind the tasks, for example. just an example what that, so that you can imagine what I'm talking about. When the process, the request finishes, so the last step is finished, we are putting in a module that automatically creates a PDF file. That is a summary of the whole process form, of the results, of the workflow, and we attach that, or maybe we automatically send it out via email. And that creation of that PDF file can be put behind a human task. That means you still have that view for the department, but the workflow in the background is doing, I do not say technical stuff, because it's also designed to be done by the department themselves. But you can do, you can put an additional functionality behind it without overflowing the process model itself. So the process model itself is simple, but the functionality behind it maybe has a different layer, but that is not seen or visible for the users, for the employees.
Right. When you say low code and no code, you mean that the people who are designing your workflow don't need to have the ability to program that workflow using code. And it sounds like this is a big solution in terms of the handover between your business requirements and the technical implementation of those business requirements. I mean, my question here is, how much actual technical expertise are you expecting business teams to have at using this kind of approach where you diagram in a visual format? That visual format becomes the feeder for implementation pretty directly. And then implementation is a selection process rather than a customization process. How much technical expertise do you have to have? And what does this do in terms of changing the demographics of business teams and their implementation support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, it depends a little bit, of course, on the goal where you want to, that you want to achieve. So what is the process that you want to achieve? That depends, or on that depends the technical knowledge, of course. But I say, for just a normal workflow, if you are able to use your computer in a correct way to write emails via Outlook, you're good to go to also create team workflows. Of course, when we are coming to that step that you want to transfer information via interfaces, when we are coming to the part of web services or SQL databases, and we are also handling this via the action list that I mentioned before. So it's also not something that we program. It's simply putting a module into TIM and giving it some parameters. So it's also not something related to programming, but of course you need some technical know-how, how in general an SQL database, for example, works, or how a web service works in general. But for connecting to the web service, you do not need any kind of programming. You simply give it the parameters, the right parameters, and this is exactly the part where you need some technical knowledge. But this is only needed, of course, if you do that functionality. That means if you are creating workflows that do not have any connection to our third-party system, you're implementing the workflow as a standalone workflow, then everybody can do it. Really, the normal TIM training for a normal, that you can handle the whole system. And with handling, I mean, you can use workflows as a process participant, you can use it as a process owner, but also you're the process designer, takes one day. And in that one day, you get to know the whole application and everybody is able to use it. And you have to think about TIM like a toolbox. And the main knowledge that you need to build up is basically, what tool do I need to use in order to solve my problem? But the tool is not a programming tool. It's simply a low-code, no-code tool.
Yeah, and I can confirm that. I had the pleasure last summer to have a, I forgot how we called it, Max, quick start, quick training, whatever, like 4 hours of training that we split on 2 days. And after those 4 hours, I felt confident and I did actually, we had a little HR process as an example. I felt comfortable to automate that. You know, obviously it did not have all the fancy bells and whistles that you just said, like database connectivity and all that type of stuff, but it was not a high hurdle. So I liked that a lot. So, but just to have it said, and correct me if I'm wrong. So if I remember it correctly, so we created a diagram in the modeling tool and we pushed it over into TIM, right? It showed up there as a versioned process. Then we went through test to test to test, created the forms that are needed, right? Where it was stored. Then we moved on, had the action handlers that you mentioned, right? So where you did the parameter configuration. And then basically you press the magic button and you made it available, executed, you made it available for users to use. Is that, do I remember that correctly?
That's totally correctly. TIM process consists of, I say, three different parts. The first is the BPMN diagram. That's the process model we were talking about. That defines the different tasks, that defines the responsibilities, the decisions in your process. The second one is the form that Roland mentioned. And this is something that we are doing via an editor, a WYSIWYG editor. That means simply by drag and drop, you can create your form, simply put in input fields, select boxes, whatever you need for your process form. And then you can easily adapt it to the different process steps. And maybe there is also a very important philosophy for our tool. We are not creating forms for each of the process steps. Because when you imagine big processes with 15 activities and you need to create a different or a separate form for each of these steps, you're getting insane. So basically what our approach to that is, you are creating a big form and then we have it, we call it element control. And with the element control, you can define the process form for each of the process steps. So basically you're creating the field that you need or the fields that you need. And then you're going through the different process steps and say, for that process steps, I do not need that area yet in that form. So I simply hide it. In the next process step, that area maybe is disabled because I should not be able to do any changes anymore. For the next step, that part maybe is then mandatory. So basically, you're jumping through the different steps and adapting your form. And this gives you a high advantage in maintaining your process because when you need to remove a field or if you need to change a field or create a new field, you do not need to do it for each of the steps or for each forms like other tools do it. You do it once and then you simply just say, where should this field be visible? Where should it be mandatory? Or where should it be disabled? So it's also very easy to create these forms.
To have a little flashback that fits nicely into the conversation that JM and I had a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about data modeling and, and how people rationalize data. In all reality, most people don't do it, right? They think data is just there. So I like that approach very much because it forces you to think about, okay, what do I need now? What do I need next? You know, or if there's conditions in there. If I remember a little example, it was like onboarding of people and whatever. If you request this, then you don't have to request that. If you request this, you don't have to request that. And then we were hiding those fields. Yeah, that was very convenient.
Yeah, exactly. This is done via rules, for example. We simply have in our form editor, there are rules. They are very easy built up. You simply say, if that field has that value, show that field. If it has another value, hide it. So it's also very simple done in the process form itself. But you mentioned a big important topic here, the data modeling. This is also something that we do not want our users to take care about. The data model in the background, do I need a SQL database or do I have different tables with different columns or something like that? This is also something that we want to keep away from the users. The users, they should really concentrate on drawing their BPMN files, on creating their process form, and the workflow and the form together, they are creating the data modeling in the background automatically. So we do not start with creating tables or something like that. We really go into the workflow, we create process flows, we create process forms, and the rest is done via the tool itself. And I think this is also a very, very important step for the low-code, no-code, because this is also a level of technical parts that should not be visible to the users themselves.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
But just coming back to my point three that Roland mentioned, the action handlers, they are just optional. That means they are only there if you want to achieve additional functionality, extended functionalities in your workflow, and you do not need them mandatory in the process flow. But if you want to do, you can do them.
And this makes it so that it feels like these teams are much more in control and you can create these on the fly. My question now comes to governance of workflows, because we've talked a little bit about this before, but talk to me about some recommendations you've seen in the way that the team structures the approval of new workflows, the life cycle and sort of maintenance of new workflows or workflows as they age, the eventual decommissioning of workflows and replacement with new workflows. Like, how do you manage the practice of workflow management?
Yeah, what we always, or what I think is a very good approach in the companies is to create, I say, citizen developers. So not that everybody in the department is able to create their workflows, because of course you need some kind of know-how to create workflows. So it's not something that is so easily done that you simply roll out the tool to the whole company, everybody's clicking their old workflows together, and you need some kind of know-how and some kind of training. And of course you also learn with the workflows that you have created. This is exactly what I meant with the toolbox. When you want to put a nail into your wall, of course you can use your knife or whatever, but you should use your hammer. And this is always what I say, take the optimal way in the workflow. And this is something that comes with the experience. And therefore, it's always very useful to have some kind of citizen developers. I do not mean with that they are in the IT department. It's simply something we always say, it's somebody with the Tim hat. He gets a Tim hat on his head, and then he is the person responsible for the workflows for maybe, for example, the HR department. Or you have one central department that is responsible for the workflow creation, and the other departments are coming to them, but they are not in the IT department. So have a group or have different persons that are really specialized in the topic and that they know the tool and that they can do the best solution, not just the solution, that they can do the best solution. And therefore, really, that citizen developer approach is very helpful.
Yeah, but there's also one thing when we talk about governance, right? And I alluded to it in a little bit earlier, you know, is when you go into version control of your processes, mm-hmm. right? So, and there's two aspects, and I'm going to look a little bit at our time, you know, there's two aspects that I want to talk about. One is obviously, how do you manage those different versions? Right. When it comes to execution. And then obviously, how do you get visibility? So take a step back, you know, go on your little hill and look at your whole landscape that you've built. How do you get visibility into the processes to get an input for whatever process mining or process analysis to improve the process the next time? So two questions.
Mm-hmm. First question about the topic of the process governance. The whole process or the whole workflow is completely versionized. That means when you are creating a new workflow, you're first of all doing a draft of the old process, and the draft is your working version. In that working version, in the draft, you can do changes. You can change the form, you can change the action handlers, you can change the process model. The topic about that is very important because the old version is untouched. That means we are not changing the existing version, we are not changing the existing process model, the existing process flow. That means a workflow, a request that you are starting in the system, that will stick on his version. That means when you have version 5 in your system and you are starting a request now, then the process will stick to that version from the beginning to the end, with all the tasks, with all the forms. This is also something that's coming from the regulations, because if you have a request from 2022, maybe there were different regulations than they were in 2024. Therefore, that request must also be finished on that kind of regulations. But of course, when you are then finishing your draft version, you're creating a new one, a new version of your workflow. And then when the next person is starting a request in the system, it will take the new version, will take the new form, the new process flow, and then that version will stick to that version again. Of course, there's always that part where you say, "Now, but I need the new version now because I'm stuck, I did something wrong or whatever happened." And therefore, we have the ability to simply copy the old request. You can simply copy the old request, you can start them on the new version, and then go through them and archive the old workflow instance, the old request. And this is then our approach to that versioning control. So basically, the process always sticks in the version it was started on. If it's necessary, you can simply put it into the new version.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, but once you started, whatever, racing your race car, you don't switch cars during the race, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But when you start a new one, you get the new car. That makes sense. Exactly. But let's go to the other question, the other part of my question that I had is, you know, how do you create the visibility into what's going on, and how do you support these aspects of the process?
Yes, the visibility is, of course, a big topic. And that's also the main advantage, or a very big advantage, of the whole workflow topic, because this is the first time that you get a visibility how your processes are running, how many requests do you have per day, per month, or whatever KPI you want to see. And basically, we have different views for that. And first of all, we have the view of the process participant. The process participant, we were talking about this before, he's simply working in an inbox where he can see what he's currently assigned to do and only what he's currently assigned to do. So he has the, I say, the smallest view in the system because he only can see what he's currently responsible for. Then we have the process manager. The process manager is the process owner who's responsible for that workflow. And he's able to see all the requests in the system. He can see the status of the requests. He can see if they are in time or if they are already delayed. He can see where the workflows are currently standing, who's currently working on that instance, on that task. Then he has, of course, some tools to interfere, to maybe reassign a task. So if the workflow was initially placed to Roland, but Roland is getting ill or something like that, then the process manager can transfer the task to me. Of course, besides that, we have a complete representative functionality as well, but it's for manual purposes, the process manager can do something. And then we have the part of the reporting. In the reporting, you can access all the information that are stored in the workflow. That means coming from the process flow itself. How long did my process take from the beginning to the end? How long did my several tasks take? How often did we take which decision? All these tasks, all this information coming from the process flow can be used in the reporting. But we are taking this a step further. You can also take all the informations into consideration that are coming from the process form. And they are also very important for a process flow because when you have a process that is running slow or you have several request instances that are running slow, what I see, it often comes from the content of that request. So for example, just do it on a concrete example, when you have an hardware request and you have some requests that are running 2 or 3 weeks longer than other requests. Maybe this is coming from because you have ordered a specific kind of hardware that is coming from a specific supplier and that supplier is taking longer. And this is the important part and the important information that you need. Which request is running slow and what do they have in common? And the part what they have in common is often coming from the content of that process flow.
Yeah.
And of course, what you could also perfectly doing is on the base of the workflow is a process mining. Because the process mining, the biggest challenge during process mining is to get the information into the process mining so that you can see information, that you can visualize the process, the flow. And with a workflow tool, you have the perfect database for a process mining because you have all the information, you have all the timestamps inside, you are ready to go with one click, put it into your process mining, and you're also able to put a process mining up based on your workflows in the system.
Yeah, that was definitely what we worked on last year.
Yeah.
how we marry the workflow with a process mining tool. Exactly. But I see we're getting closer to the top of the hour, and we don't want to have too long. So one last quick question, Maximilian. Now that we've spoken about, well, the why and the how and all those things, if you want to give a listener a last tip, you know, what are the tips and tricks if somebody is looking into a workflow tool right now and says, oh, I think I might need this, you know, what would be the wisdoms of nuggets that you would give that person before they make that decision?
The first one is when you're going into the topic of the workflow and you're at that step, you have the tool and you want to, or you're, first of all, you're taking a look, what could be the first potential workflow that I want to do? Always start small and then go big. Because what I see, the most projects that fail are the ones where you establish a new tool, like Tim, a new workflow tool, and then you're taking the most complex and the biggest process that you have in your company. These are the most projects that fail because you're getting a new tool, you have a complex process, and that in combination, yeah, is destined to fail. So basically start small, make your experience with the tool, also get the people on board, because this leads me also to the next step. Don't leave the people in your company out. We started with our tool is a human workflow tool. It's employee-centric, so that the persons are very important in the workflow. And the same counts for introducing a new tool. Get the employees on board, get your persons on board, and do not do the submarine for the persons that are involved in the process. Keep them updated, get feedback from them, maybe also in an early development stage that you say, I did not finish the workflow yet, but I want to have a first alpha version. I want to publish it to my users. I want to get their feedback. Even though if the feedback, maybe there comes no feedback, they get the feeling that they're involved in that change process. Because I think this counts for everything in the company. Everything can go big or can fail with the people. And when the people are not involved in the process and working against it, then you have a problem. So basically, that's the most important part. There's always that famous quote. I think everybody knows it. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. If you do not have the culture in your company, if the peoples are working against you, you can have the best tool in the world. You will have no chance. So start small, go big, and don't leave the persons and your colleagues out.
We certainly don't want to leave people out of it. I completely agree, but we're going to leave you for a brief time, a brief break to take a moment to relax, to absorb what we've heard today, and think about a couple of questions as we go into our final section. So how might you control and manage your process workflows through a low-code or no-code approach? Think about your team. Who might become the ideal citizen developers of your business unit, of your little group, and who might govern and approve the deployment of this new functionality as you scale up with no-code or low-code automation? And lastly, what would you like to achieve in this new automation ecosystem? We'll leave you for a brief moment and come back with our final section, our conclusions, and goodbyes for the episode.
Welcome back. So I don't know, JM, typically I do a summary of the episode, but I just did it before the break. So maybe we just cut to the chase here. Max, one thing that I would do if I wouldn't know you, one question that I would have is, well, how could I reach Max and how can I get in contact and how can he educate me more about low-code, no-code automation?
Of course, first step, simply find me on LinkedIn. My name is in the description of the podcast, I hope. So you can copy it because it's not the easiest one, very German. And of course, also feel free to visit our homepage. It's tim-solutions.de. You find several information about the workflow itself. You can also get a link to our YouTube so that you maybe see, or if you want to see the whole part that I was describing with words as visuals, this is also very helpful to see this, the tool in action. And of course, we would also be happy to show it to you. So if you want to have a demonstration or something like that, we can go into the deeper into the topic of the workflow with our tool. We can take a look at all the parts that I was describing and you can get a feeling for yourself on how to create your workflows by yourself.
Well, I certainly like to try it sometime soon, my friend. Actually, I did see a couple of screenshots when we were submitting information to Gartner, which was interesting. So I got a chance to take a look around at it. It pretty cool. So here's the thumbs up from me, my friend, and a thumbs up to all of my friends out there in podcast land. Huge thank you to all of our fans and listeners for tuning in and following along with us to this point in the podcast. As we say, make sure to share this with everyone you know who might be interested in these sorts of topics, from business process experts to just end users who might want to know how these things work. We love hearing feedback as well. Feel free to reach out to us on LinkedIn or send us an email at hello@whatsyourbaseline.com. And for whatsyourbaseline.com, I'd love to talk a little bit about this episode. You can find more details, information, and all the show notes at whatsyourbaseline.com/episode67. But until we meet again, I have been JM Erlandson.
I'm Max Neumeier.
And my name is Roland Wolt.
And we will see you in the next one.